Next Sunday will mark one of the biggest events in the St. Louis African American community, the Annie Malone Parade. It's an event that is well attended by participants and onlookers alike. It pays tribute to a woman and the namesake organization that has been a big part of the community for decades now, the Annie Malone Children and Family Service Center. It's an organization that focuses on community needs, residential programs, and orphan services. Joining me in studio is Leslie Gill, the CEO of Annie Malone Children and Family Service Center. Leslie, so nice to see you. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start this way, because many people may not know. Who was Annie Malone?
So Annie Malone was really a pioneer for women in business. She was Avon and Mary Kay before Avon and Mary Kay. She started her business really to direct sell women's hair care products. And she was the first African-American millionaire in the country and was extremely philanthropic and wanted to make sure that she put her great riches and fortune back into the community, and she helped us found Annie Malone Children and Family Service Center 128 years ago.
I was just about to ask, when was all of this going on?
Yeah, we've been around for 128 years, yeah. So a really long time ago, and like I said, she was really so far ahead of her time.
Obviously. I mean, we're talking about an African-American woman,
yes,
long before the women's right to vote,
absolutely,
even, who was amassing this fortune that she was able to put to good use. That's an extraordinary story.
Yeah, and at the time, she gave the organization $10,000 to start. And back then, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
So we've been able to continue her life and legacy through the Annie Malone Children and Family Service Center, where we provide residential services to kids and family when they're in crisis.
Well, basically, the focus early on was primarily on orphans, correct?
Correct.
What was she seeing at the time that caught her interest in this area?
I mean, I think she was seeing, you know, kids in harm's way, kids in poverty, and really wanted to be a beacon of hope for families. And so this was at a time when there weren't a lot of options for kids of color. And
yeah,
so she created this orphanage primarily for kids of color.
Was she getting any help? I mean, she had money, obviously, and put that $10,000 into the project. Was she getting any help from outside her own immediate group?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, like I said, she was really a pioneer well
yeah
before her time and extremely philanthropic and generous and wanted to ensure that, you know, kids stayed safe and out of harm's way. And we were located right next to Homer G. Phillips Hospital. So many of the kids that, you know, obviously were abandoned at birth or what have you would come to Annie Malone at that time.
How has the organization evolved since then, but more in particular, more the last decade or two?
Yeah. So today we are a multifaceted social services organization. We provide services for families, particularly kids when they're in harm's way because of abuse, neglect, or just families can't get out of poverty. So today we do still provide residential services for kids who are abandoned or abused or neglected. They will come into our care and can live at Annie Malone from 12 hours up to 6 months and sometimes 6 years. It just depends on their circumstance.
You've only been in this job for a couple of months now,
yes,
but I know that you're familiar with the turf, as it were. Have conditions changed at all over the last years? I mean, is the situation getting better or worse for young people and people in this community?
Yeah, it's hard to say, Don.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I mean, we still see families living in poverty. I mean,
sure,
particularly in the northern part of the corridor of the city, in North City. Yeah. Kids are in poverty. Families are in poverty. They're still trying to find their way and make ends meet. So we serve about 2,000 kids a year who come into our care for a variety of reasons. So are things getting better? It's kind of hard to sell. I think as long as kids are still, there's still a need for Annie Malone and there's still, you know, a need to have our services in the community, no one's putting us out of business. So, you know, I don't know if that's a good indicator of good
yeah
or bad, you know.
Well, you're dealing with a couple of thousand kids a year. Has that been fairly stable over in recent years?
It has been. And I have been talking to a number of state legislators and state officials around, you know, just the whole climate of kids in foster care and kids who are coming into state custody for abuse and neglect. And, you know, we've seen a trend and a shift of moving more away from kind of residential facilities into more kinship care or foster families. But there's a great need for foster families even. So there will never be an opportunity, unfortunately, for us to go away. There's always need for great options.
Are you getting a receptive ear, as it were, from the legislature? I mean, it hasn't seemed to be very receptive to issues relating to poor people. I think of Medicaid expansion and things like that, where so many thousands, tens of hundreds of thousands of kids were affected by this.
Right. I will say that because of our history and legacy, there is a great affection for Annie Malone. We've been around for a really long time. I would say that stakeholders are very concerned about the future of Annie Malone. We're the only placement for kids in the city of St. Louis, so we are really necessary. And I think, you know, those who are in elected office recognize the fact that we are necessary. We're not just nice.
Yeah. Does Annie Malone of the center get into the issue of health care at all? And I'm thinking, before you respond, of the For the Sake of All report that came out, which indicated that that is such an important factor, particularly for poor people, that life expectancy is so much shorter for people who are brought up in an environment where health care is limited.
Sure. So we do, when we are serving clients, when they come into our doors, we ensure that they get primary care. So we'll take them to a local clinic or medical office just to have an exam, because we often don't know the last time they've had an exam. So we want to make sure we know kind of what their medical history is coming in the door. We partner with organizations like Myrtle Hilliard Davis and People's Health Clinic to ensure that those services are provided in the community. We have a nurse on staff who also tends to the, you know, more urgent needs of the kids when they come in the door. So I'm very familiar with For Sake of All, and I think we see the results often of emotional trauma and families who are in severe crisis and haven't had the necessary resources in the community to be able to respond to those types of emotional needs.
How is Annie Malone funded?
So we're a United Way agency, and so we receive great support from the United Way. We also receive fees for service from the state of Missouri. So most of our revenue is either from the state or from United Way, and we're really, really, really focused on building a culture of philanthropy so that we get more dollars from corporations and individuals.
How about community outreach? We're talking about at-risk families. I mean, kids are obviously a focus, but there are adults out there too, and parents, if you will,
sure,
who also have needs.
Yeah. So one of the programs that we do offer is a parenting education program. Oftentimes, you know, parents who have kids in our care have hit, you know, really rough times economically or socially, and just need another outlet. And so we do offer a 10-week parenting education class where groups of families will get together with one of our master trainers, and they come in and talk parenting issues. You know, there's no book on parenting. And so we want to provide more of a support network. And that is a program that we're looking to expand to be able to meet more of the community needs around parenting support, and just helping people make really good decisions when possible. Sometimes when you're stressed or in poverty or trying to figure out how to make ends meet, you often make decisions out of real sheer stress and emotion.
You know, you really make an interesting point when you say there's no book on parenting. Most parents learn how to parent from their parents, for better and sometimes for worse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really an important skill to acquire and to become educated upon.
Absolutely. And, you know, many of the issues we see, Don, are cyclical. So, you know, broken families and hurt people just continue to hurt people, unfortunately. And so we're trying to draw kind of a line in the sand and help people have a support network where they maybe didn't have it before.
Again, just noting that you've only been there for a couple of months, but you certainly heard if this is happening. Do any of these kids come back years later and to say thanks or whatever?
Oh, absolutely. We actually have a young woman who lives in our transitional living program right now, and she actually came to us in crisis. Her parents, she experienced trauma in her life and, you know, witnessed her mother being killed by her father. And so she came into our care with her siblings as a real emergency placement. They had no place else to go, so they came to Annie Malone. And her siblings got to be older, and they were able to move out and be on their own. And then this young woman went to live with a sister, but it didn't work out. She didn't feel like she had the structure, the family structure in place. And so she had a desire to come back. So she came back to Annie Malone, has been in our program, our transitional living program, for the past 4 months, doing really well. You know, she just went to prom. She's getting ready to graduate from high school. So that is a case of where, you know, we want to really meet the community's needs, and we want to be a safe haven when kids are in need. And so, yes, you know, that's a reason why they come back. And sometimes they come back to say thank you. Just on Saturday, we had a young man who had come through our program, and he came back to volunteer. So once you're a part of the Annie Malone family, you're always part of the Annie Malone family.
What are the criteria for getting involved in something like the transitional housing program?
So transitional living, transitional living and independent living is really for kids who are aging out of foster care, mm-hmm. perhaps haven't been placed in a foster family or with any sort of relative. And so they need a place to go. It is a home setting. They live kind of in a group home with, you know, five or six other young people. They go to school. They have after school jobs. They participate in extracurricular activities. They go to prom. They play sports. I mean, it's a very normal life. And many of our young people are referred to us by the state. But we're also a safe haven for homeless youth. So if you have no place else to go, and we have space available, we will take those young people who are homeless as well.
How big a problem is that, homeless youth?
Oh, it's huge. That's a great growth opportunity for us. We are looking daily at ways where we can expand transitional living, because ideally, you know, you want these young people to come in and sort of stabilize, but then be able to move and progress into independent living where they can live on their own, but they still have case management and social emotional support from the agency. So, you know, we're probably turning away 2 to 3 kids, you know, a week who need a place to go, but we just don't have space.
I forget the number, but we've done some programs in the past here on the number of homeless kids going to the St. Louis City Public Schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it was astounding how
yeah.
many there are.
I mean, I hear some days it's 30% to 40% there, the homeless population rate. So, you know, I've talked to Dr. Adams a lot about, you know, how do we help solve this problem? And there's a real need for services for, you know, young people who are homeless.
With regard to young people or any people that you're involved with transitioning out of the system,
mm-hmm.
how does that work?
It doesn't. Unfortunately, there isn't enough, you know, there just hasn't been enough time and attention given to the skill sets that young people need to be independent, and really the social and emotional wellness. You know, talk about for sake of all, you know, our kids have experienced a lot of trauma, and that trauma hasn't been dealt with. So we really have a great need for opportunities for them to stay connected, either to our agencies or other organizations like us, to provide that emotional support and coaching and life skills that, you know, they obviously don't get from home because they don't have a home. So, you know, that's, like I said, a real growth opportunity for us to be able to look at ways to provide those support services beyond the age of 18 and just keep kids, you know, more connected to their community.
Boy, it's a shame to have to use terms like a growth opportunity
when
you're talking about homeless,
I know.
Homeless kids.
But it's necessary, you
sure.
know. It really is necessary.
What about staff? I mean, you've alluded to many different talents and areas of expertise that would be required by these youngsters. What kind of a staff do you have?
So we're a smaller agency. We have about 40 employees. Many of our staff are skilled in social work or counseling, and, you know, particularly the staff that provide direct service. But we also have, you know, I'm the CEO. We have a director of finance and administration. We're mm-hmm. looking at ways to raise money. So we have a fundraising consultant in HR. So we're an enterprise, and, you know, we're a $3 million enterprise. And so we have to operate like a business, you know, like any other organization.
And what does the parade, the annual parade, bring to the whole thing?
Yeah, so that's a unique asset for our organization. The parade to honor Annie Malone, the woman, this is our 106th year. And so we are the second oldest and one of the largest African-American parades in the country, just number two behind the Bud Billiken Parade in Chicago. So it's a great asset. It really is an opportunity for us to tell our story, to tell the great work that we do every day, and really to celebrate the community. It's intended to be a fun family event. I understand we have sometimes as many as 75,000 spectators. So it's my first. I'm looking forward to it on Sunday. But it really is intended to tell the story of Annie Malone Children and Family Service Center.
You know, I have to tell you, I've been in that parade on a number of occasions.
Nice.
I've never seen anything like it. The way the community responds to it is just outstanding.
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
And this year, Don, we have close to 150 units in the parade. So, you know, I think that's also really indicative of, you know, the community support for the agency.
Of course. Well, that's happening this Sunday, and the parade begins at 1 o'clock, begins at 20th and Market, and quite an event it is.
Yes.
Leslie, thank you so much. Leslie Gillis, CEO of the Annie Malone Center. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much, Don.
All the best. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.